Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us live in the studio. Last week, of course, on Saturday morning, we were live from Gulfstream Park. That was a lot of fun. Got great feedback from folks. Really appreciate that. So, again, thanks to everybody here in our studios in Albany and everybody who participated down in Florida as well to put together a couple of nice shows, a couple of nice mornings, Friday and Saturday morning last week, live from Gulfstream Park. And then I was running around all day long on Saturday, going out to the winner's circle after the stakes and trying to grab some connections, trainers, owners, jockeys, to put together a little recap package for Sunday. So hopefully you enjoyed that as well. Again, great, fun weekend. Forte on the stretch when Maj went by, I thought Forte's toast. And then he came back and did very, very well. I will note, we talked about it on the handicapping show earlier. Forte originally had a 98 buyer, but subsequently it was discovered there was a timing issue. The race has been retimed, slower. So Forte went from a 98 buyer to a 95 buyer over at Oak Lawn. Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby with a 94. I said on the handicapping show earlier, I have liked Angel Empire. I liked him last week. I liked him in the race just prior, and liked him enough that the March 11th or 12th, whatever the date was on that Derby future pool, grabbed him at a 38-1. So we'll have a little Angel of Empire at a price heading into the Kentucky Derby. Just hope everything holds together there. But it was a fun weekend with you know, the three-year-old action last weekend, and it continues this weekend. Wood Memorial Bluegrass Santa Anita Derby. We were scheduled to talk to our friend Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown. Always like to catch up with him via the Countdown to the Crown package, which focuses on the lead-up to the Triple Crown races and the three-year-olds and the prep races and whatnot. I will tout you. The game plan was to talk to him, and we had some equipment issues. That's why we're also on late. But I will tout you, you can go to horseplayernow.com and check out Countdown to the Crown. He reviews the two stakes last week, Florida Derby and the Arkansas Derby, and previews, you know, coming up now, the three stakes today, Bluegrass, Wood Memorial, and Santa Anita Derby. So again, you can check out the latest Countdown to the Crown to get Jeremy's thoughts, and our apologies to him for, you know, again, having some issues here today, so we didn't catch up to him. Bottom of the hour, though, we will catch up with John White, morning line odds maker from Santa Anita. Santa Anita Derby today, so we'll get some of John's thoughts. He also has an online column where he took a look at the Bluegrass and the Wood Memorial as well, so we'll get some of John's thoughts on those stakes. John also has the very intriguing each year Derby strike list of factors that over the years he has put together and are strikes against horses, and the less strikes you have, the better. And it's kind of proven out over the last few years. If you have two strikes or less, you're in good shape. And I will say, looking at John's online column with the strikes this year, zero strikes includes Angel of Empire and the Japanese horse, Derma Sotogaki, as well. But they're the only two with zero strikes, but I like that for Angel of Empire. But again, we'll talk to John a little bit about that as well at the bottom of the hour. Again, appreciate your tuning in last week. It was a lot of fun. And it wasn't just the Florida Derby. There was a great undercard of stakes action as well. And hopefully everybody enjoyed our two mornings there. Appreciate everybody who came over. And we managed to get some nice taped pieces with Shug and Dale, Safi Joseph, and some others. Appreciate them. And then I stumbled onto, I was out of the winner's circle after the Florida Derby, and there was Todd Pletcher standing right next to me. And so for the Sunday recap show, got a great moments after the Florida Derby thought from Todd Pletcher. And at the end of the interview, Mike Rapoli came up and gave him a big hug. So it was a nice little exclamation point on the piece. And so it was, as they say, great weekend, and we appreciate all the feedback you gave us. Had Steve Bick, Brian Netto and Steve Bick did the Friday and then the Saturday handicapping shows. That was a lot of fun as well. Steve subsequently hopped on an airplane, headed up to Kentucky, and earlier this week, mentioned this on the handicapping show earlier, but I will reiterate, Steve this week was in Kentucky for the Kentucky Breeders and Owners annual awards dinner. And then last couple of days he's been at Keeneland with the radio show. But at the awards dinner, Steve got the Charles Englehart Award for outstanding coverage of racing, and well deserved, because you know, we mentioned it earlier, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week with the radio show. He does a great job. We also touted on the handicapping show earlier, pick up a couple of his shows from earlier this week where he looked at that Financial Times article, which may be a little more than a week old. But again, if you go to Google, type in Financial Times, buyer, CAW, something like that, you'll pull it up, and it is worth a read. It was a really nice in-depth article on the computer-assisted wagering groups that now put so much money into the pools and affect things and change those late odds and whatnot. Some tracks have done something and some tracks just can't really do anything because it's so much money, it's hard to turn it away. But it looks in depth at that. And then, as I say, Steve earlier this week had a couple of his mornings dedicated to talking about that with, you know, Andy Beyer and Pat Cummings and some others in the game who were also quoted in the Financial Times article as well. So again, worth checking out the article and the shows from Steve earlier this week on a topic that a lot of people probably don't realize it, but when if you're not really aware of these CAW groups and you read the article, you will quickly understand what an important issue it is for horse racing and just the average bettor who, you know, you look up and you see your odds make a big drop in the last couple of flashes, and this is part of that equation. Do want to mention today at Santa Anita, there's a mandatory in their Rainbow Six, so keep that in mind as well. They're expecting a rather large pool. I thought I saw, let me see if I, the pool estimated to approach $3 million. With the jackpot pick six out at Santa Anita this afternoon. So keep that in mind. If you like that wager, you can jump in. That was part of the discussion as well. There are very mixed feelings about those jackpot pick six plays around the country. Do want to note also, I mention it all the time, Palm Sunday now has changed. Back in the day, Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, no horse racing or wagering available in New York. Palm Sunday changed. I can't figure out the Easter Sunday thing. No problem with, you know, a religious holiday. And, no problem even that there's a holiday from racing and give the people in racing a little bit of a break. But it's a little bit of an anachronism. I mean, back in the day, if you got a break, you got a break from a 5 or 6 day racing week. Now it's more of a 3 or 4 day racing week. And so I don't know whether people are crying out for the break as much, and not to mention a lot of the folks on the backstretch aren't getting a break anyway because the horses still have to be fed and watered and whatnot. But the crazy part about this that makes it such an anachronism in New York, no wagering on horse racing on Easter, is that you can walk into a convenience store and buy as many lottery tickets as you want. You can go to most racetracks and walk in and now play slot machines because they have Racinos attached. And so it's just, as I say, a little bit of an anachronism these days. But because of the law, no horse racing in New York, but also no wagering. So Capital OTB closed tomorrow. And because of that, we will cut off the horse racing programming here, the live racing programming here on the network at about midnight tonight. But our man Dan in the control room put together a nice package of prep races leading into the three-year-old fillies in the Kentucky Oaks and the three-year-old males in the Kentucky Derby. Goes back to the two-year-old season and some of the prominent races for the two-year-olds, and then some of the prominent prep races for the three-year-olds as well. Again, both on the filly and the male side. So all day long tomorrow we will loop that. It's probably a couple hours long, but it'll give you a chance to look at some of the potential entrants coming into the Oaks and the Derby just about a little less than a month away now, and give you some ideas of what you may expect coming out of the prep races. And again, the last couple of weeks of prep races, including last weekend with Forte and Angel of Empire, and we'll start to solidify things and really start that Derby and Oaks conversation after today, Wood Memorial, Bluegrass, and Santa Anita Derby. Yesterday, Keeneland kicked off. They had some stakes action yesterday. The three-year-old sprint side of things in the Lafayette, it was Corona Bolt. I like that one. Hijazi was getting the action, went off as the 7-5 favorite, but Corona Bolt for Brad Cox and Stone Street did prove best at 2-1, $6.82. You gotta, and again, a penny breakage. It's hard to believe everybody hasn't jumped onto that in 2023, but Corona Bolt got it done. Brad Cox afterwards kind of indicated, they have a nice little three-year-old sprinter, and so I would expect Corona Bolt to be a player in that subdivision as the year progresses with, again, horses, races like King's Bishop and Woody Stevens and whatnot going forward. But Corona Bolt in the Lafayette, also yesterday, the Transylvania. On the turf for that subdivision, I like quite a bit, the three-year-olds on the turf. It was Mostache, and I did not have Mostache in my mix for Vicky Oliver. But when I did the show yesterday, I said, this is an intriguing race, and here are the horses I like, and here are a few more that I think are interesting and playable, and Mostache was one of those. And Mostache looked pretty good, taking them pretty much all the way around. Nagarok was the favorite, kind of a lukewarm 7-2 favorite, wound up second in there. And Webslinger at 9-2 runs third. And that was a horse I also thought was a little bit intriguing in the group. But you got $12, just under $13 for the Vicky Oliver trainee Mostache. And that one in Nagarok certainly moved forward as horses to kind of look towards on that, in that, in amongst that subdivision of the three-year-olds on the turf. It was a nice performance, though, for Mostache, though, as I say, on the front end there, Luis Saez on board. The Ashland, talked about this earlier on the handicapper's report. The Ashland, defining purpose, gets it done under Brian Hernandez. Nice run there, half a length victor over Punch Bowl. Punch Bowl was the favorite at 6-5, and Julia Shining winds up running third. But defining purpose, Ken McPeak upsets the apple cart a little bit at $42 and change, and looked pretty good doing it. Ken giving credit to his assistant, who he said was watching the horse in the lead-up to this race at Keeneland, had come out of an Oaklawn race prior that wasn't as promising, that led to that 20-1 price as what the third longest price on the board. But again, nice little result there on the three-year-old filly side of things. You would think the Oaks is calling off of a race like that for Ken McPeak and company. And as I said, I have a little potential Ken McPeak upset in the Bluegrass this afternoon. We shall see how that works. I think Ken McPeak can put a couple together on the three-year-old female and the three-year-old male side of things. Friday and Saturday down at Keeneland. I hope he hasn't used up all the magic, as it were, going forward into the Bluegrass, where, as I say, Sun Thunder a little bit intriguing to me this afternoon. All right, we will take a break. As promised a little bit earlier, be joined by John White, morning line odds maker from Santa Anita. Big day out there with the Santa Anita Derby. So we'll talk that and much more with John right after this. Stay tuned.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Happy to be joined now by our friend John White. We haven't talked to John in a while, but the morning line odds maker out at Santa Anita. Big day there with the Santa Anita Derby. John, good morning. And having a couple of nephews that live out in L.A., before we get started, I have to just ask, have you dried off yet after a crazy winter out there?
Yes, boy. Temperature around 80 degrees, fast and firm, and the sun is shining.
Nice. I saw that the weather was supposed to be great, and, you know, knock on wood, that holds up, and you guys deserve it on a big day like this. And mandatory pay in the jackpot today. I mentioned that earlier, so folks can look forward to that. And let's jump right in, because we'll talk Santa Anita Derby first, but having pulled up your online column, you also had some thoughts on the bluegrass and the wood. So we'll tap into your thoughts there as well. But let's start out on the West Coast, Santa Anita Derby. I pulled up a replay going back to the San Felipe. We're going to look at number 3, Practical Move, get the victory in the San Felipe on March 4th. Go Rocket Ride will run second. Skinner runs third. They're all back this afternoon. I'll tell you what, I thought the Japanese Invader, Mandarin Hero, could be a little bit interesting in here as well. But what are your thoughts on this afternoon's Santa Anita Derby?
Well, I think Practical Move definitely is the horse to beat, not only off his victory in the San Felipe, which was coming off a layoff, but also in the Grade 2 Los Alamitos maturity in his final start as a 2-year-old. You know, T.D. Thornton of the Thoroughbred Daily News points out something that I think is really relevant in terms of trying to judge who are the better three-year-olds heading to the Kentucky Derby. And he pointed out that Practical Move owns the two fastest times among the 16 points-earning Kentucky Derby qualifying stakes races run at Abiona 16th in 2022-2023. In the Los Alamitos Futurity, Practical Move's final time was 141.65. That's excellent for a mile and a 16th race, 141.65. And he was flirting with 141 and change again in the San Felipe with his final time of 142.01. And T.D. Thornton pointed out for perspective, no other horses in that series of 16 races clocked below 143.06. And I don't think we've seen the best of Practical Move yet. I think he's still on an upward trajectory. So I think he is definitely the horse to beat. He's got tactical speed, so he's not going to be one of those come from way back like we saw Forte in the Florida Derby. So that, I think, is a big key. He can sit, if the pace is kind of slow, he can be up close. If the pace is fast, he can be a little further back, but not too far back. And he seems to make a great team with Ramon Vasquez. So this is a jockey that, at the start of the Santa Anita meet, I really, really thought this is a terrific rider, and he has ridden in fine form throughout the meet, and he just seems to make a perfect partner with Practical Move, trained by Tim Yakteen.
And I will note that Yakteen with this horse is an interesting story because he's, with the Baffert situation, he's picked up some of the Baffert horses, including this afternoon, National Treasure, but Practical Move has been with Tim Yakteen since the start of the career.
That's exactly right. So, you know, and I will tell you this, he got on my radar but last year, back when he was a two-year-old during the Del Mar meet, because I make the morning line for Del Mar, and Practical Move, even in his first race, he ended up in a very, very tough race, probably the toughest maiden race of the entire summer at Del Mar. That race was won by Cave Rock, who, of course, would go on to the Breeders' Cup and be the odds-on favorite at the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So that was really no disgrace for Practical Move in his first race to finish second to Cave Rock. And in his second start, he finished third to National Treasure. But keep in mind, those two races were sprints. They were 6.5 furlong races. Practical Move, when he stretched out to a mile, he finished second but was moved up to disqualification because Fort Bragg mugged him in the stretch at the top of the stretch or during the stretch run. And then Practical Move ran into Bob Hope sprinting again at Del Mar, and he faced Having a Meltdown, who might very well be maybe the best three-year-old, at that time, two-year-old sprinter of the class. So that, again, was no disgrace sprinting. But then when he stretched out again, to beyond a sprint in the Los Al Futurity in San Felipe, he won both of those races. So he's 3-for-3 in races at a mile or longer. So again, that's something else that I think might be lost on some people, that he has yet to lose a race when he's going beyond a sprint, when he's going a mile or longer.
I am very intrigued to see what he does this afternoon, not just as far as the finishing position, but the buyer, because he comes in as one of the few three-year-olds with a triple-digit buyer on the resume, and I think that is intriguing as well. Once you get past him, what else are you looking at in the race? As I said, Go Rocket Go, lightly raced for Richard Mandela, is interesting. And again, I thought the Japanese runner was intriguing in here.
Well, it's an interesting race, that's for sure. By the way, one more point about Practical Move. Not only did he win that San Felipe with a 100 buyer coming off a layoff, but if you go back and watch the tape of that race, his gallop out was phenomenal after the finish. You wouldn't have thought that he would be galloping out with such vigor as he did that day. Again, I think that's another really encouraging sign for him today because of going the longer distance. And with the San Felipe race under his belt. Go Rocket Ride is interesting from the standpoint that he finished a very respectable second in the San Felipe with only one race under his belt, and that was a sprint. And so he went into the mile and the 16th San Felipe having only raced in a 6-furlong race. He got a very good 92 buyer in his debut and then stepped up to get a 96 in the San Felipe. So there's obviously plenty of upside here for this Candy Ride colt in that he's so lightly raced. You know, that can go both ways, though. I mean, he's lacking experience, but he's got speed, and there's not a lot of speed in the Santa Anita Derby, and it actually doesn't look like there's a ton of early speed in the Kentucky Derby this year, unlike last year where we had, one of the fastest paces, if not the fastest pace in Kentucky Derby history, setting it up for Rich Strike to pull off that 50-1 upset. Interestingly, Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela, who has accomplished so much during his tremendous career, he's never won the Santa Anita Derby.
Uh-huh.
So this would be kind of a real note, very noteworthy if Richard Mandela could pull it off today, and he certainly could because Go Rocket Ride is very talented. And don't sleep on Skinner, because they've been very high on this Curlin colt all along. John Sheriffs told me last summer that he was excited about a Curlin colt that would be better as a 3-year-old. And they were so high on Skinner that as a 2-year-old maiden, he ran in the third in the Del Mar Futurity, a grade one race that was won by Cave Rock. And then he finished sixth in the grade one American Pharoah, again won by Cave Rock. But that shows a lot that John Sheriffs was running a maiden in two grade one races. And Skinner came out in his first race as a 3-year-old and looked terrific. He won with a 95 buyer. His previous top buyer was a 79. So he really took his buyer game to a much higher level in his maiden win. And then he came back rather quickly in just 3 weeks. By today's standards, that's quick. You know, Seth, when we were younger, that wasn't quick. Secretariat ran in the Wood Memorial 2 weeks before the Kentucky Derby. That was common in those days for a horse to come back in 2 weeks. Nowadays, it's very rare for a horse to come back in 3 weeks, and that was the case with Skinner. And I think that's one reason Skinner might not have had as much of a late kick in the San Felipe as he did, and he still rallied to finish third. It wasn't that he ran bad, but I think he's certainly capable, now that he's had 5 weeks between races, to improve on his San Felipe performance. And you're talking about one of the great trainers of all time, of course, best known as the trainer of Zenyatta. But don't forget, John Sheriffs won the 2005 Kentucky Derby with 50-1 long shot Giacomo. I was sorry to see him win that race that day, though, because I had money on Closing Argument, who finished second at 71-1 odds, losing by just a half a length. And the Japanese horse, Mandarin Hero, he's the big wild card in today's Santa Anita Derby, no question about it. He's by an American champion in Shanghai, Bobby. He's done all of his racing in Japan, but he hasn't raced at the A tracks in Japan. He's raced at a B track, but he has a very good record. He's run 5 times, and he's won 4 of them. Now, it shows on his past performances that he lost his 2023 debut, his only race this year by a neck, but seeing the video of that race, he actually lost that race by 1 length, maybe 3/4, but it was a lot more than a neck. So I don't know who's doing the charting over there in Japan for that track, but they were way. I was a chart caller for the racing form for many, many years. In fact, called the Breeders' Cup charts in 1986 at Oak Tree at Santa Anita, 1987 at Hollywood Park. And my favorite chart I ever called was when Ferdinand beat Ali Sheba. That I called the official chart of that race, Ferdinand winning by a nose over Ali Sheba, a showdown of two Kentucky Derby winners, and it came down to a photo finish with Horse of the Year honors on the line. So Mandarin Heroes, just a big question mark, but you know the Japanese horses have been doing so well on the world stage in the last several years, largely through the success of their super sire, Sunday Silence, the 1989 Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner, who became a phenomenal sire in Japan. And so you really have to take a look at every horse from Japan these days. In fact, in the recent UAE Derby in Dubai, Japanese horses finished first, second, third, and fourth. And the winner, Dermo Sotogaki is really highly regarded coming to the Kentucky Derby. Randy Moss of NBC, who does buyer speed figures, they don't have official buyer speed figures for the UAE Derby, but according to Randy Moss, the estimated buyer for Dermo Sotogaki would be higher than even the winner of the Dubai World Cup, the rich race for older horses. So he's an interesting horse himself going to the Kentucky Derby. But we'll just have to see how Manhattan Herald fares today, as he is the first horse from Japan to ever compete in the Santa Anita Derby.
Yeah, I thought he was very intriguing. And while you were talking, we showed the November win he had. That was nice little grind-out victory there to end his two-year-old season. As you say, he just missed in his three-year-old season. Maybe the neck length, maybe that's something's lost in translation maybe there. But intriguing edition of the Santa Anita Derby this afternoon. We wish you and everybody out there a lot of fun and good luck. And, again, hoping that nice weather holds up. But as I say, I looked at your online column. You also had some thoughts on the bluegrass and the Wood Memorial. So let's shift attention to the bluegrass. I'm going to play around. I thought Sun Thunder in the maiden breaker on New Year's Eve was very impressive. And I thought Kenny McPeak may have a good budding three-year-old. Comes back fairly quickly off the Louisiana Derby. And I looked it up. They're kind of on the cusp as far as points. So I think they're looking for points. So they may be happy running second or third, but I'm going to take a shot with Sun Thunder. But right underneath I have Verifying, and looking at your column, I know you like Verifying a little bit in here, and I pulled up the allowance optional claiming win, January 14th, number 5 will be Verifying getting it done. And off of this race, I think a lot of people were high on Verifying. Subsequently fourth in the Rebel, but I think a rebound is very likely today. Give us your thoughts in the bluegrass.
Well, Tappa Trice going in as the favorite certainly looms the one to beat. Again, here's another colt with a lot of talent. That's obvious. I mean, and he cost over $1 million. And so this is an expensive purchase at public auction. He got beat first time out, but has rattled off three consecutive wins. And in that Tampa Bay Derby, I wouldn't have given much chance to him at the top of the stretch. But, boy, he certainly turned on the afterburners and won going away by two lengths. Now, he's facing much tougher competition, I think, in this race, including Classic Car Wash, who was the runner-up in the Tampa Bay Derby. But as far as these other horses, I mean, you mentioned Sun Thunder. You certainly can't throw him out in this race. I wouldn't be surprised to see him run big and possibly win this race. And Verifying to me, the thing I like about him is, again, I think he's going to get the jump on Tappa Trice big time. In other words, turning for home, I expect Verifying to be in a very prominent position in Tappa Trice, unless all of a sudden he's learned how to get out of the gate better or he's found a way to have more early speed. He's going to be trying to come charging late. And I don't know if Verifying, as good as Verifying is, I don't know if Tappa Trice can catch him necessarily. Verifying is a son of Justify, and Justify will be one of my all-time favorites for the simple reason that I was able to get $100 on him before his first career start in the Kentucky Derby Future book at the Wynn race book in Las Vegas through a friend. That's before Justify's first race. So 100 on him in the Kentucky Derby at 100-1. So that was a nice $10,000 score for me when Justify got the job done in the Run for the Roses. But Verifying, I'm willing to draw a line through his defeat in the Rebel. It was a sloppy track that day. It was a roughly run race. And I think he's going to bounce back big time today. Brad Cox, what can you say about that guy? He has emerged as absolutely one of the elite trainers in the United States. He's got such an arsenal of three-year-olds between Todd Pletcher and Brad Cox. Those two and the Japanese are going to fill up a lot of slots in that Kentucky Derby starting gate of 20. And Verifying has one of my favorite jockeys these days, Tyler Gaffalione. That guy is just absolutely sensational to me as a rider. So there's a lot to like about Verifying. And the best thing about verifying to me, Seth, is I would expect he will not be the favorite in the race because Tapper Trice, with all the hype and his three straight wins, and he is the morning line favorite, and he probably will be the favorite. So I like trying to beat the favorite here with verifying.
I like it. Let's shift attention now to the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct this afternoon. And I pulled up a replay from the Gotham. And this is interesting for a couple of reasons, because looking at your column, I know you like Slip Mahoney. The winner will be number 12, Raise Kane. Slip Mahoney, the number 11, will run second. Same connections that were disappointed a little bit with Instant Coffee a couple of weeks ago, Brad Cox and Al Gold with Slip Mahoney. But the winner here, Raise Kane, is going to go in the Bluegrass, and that's going to go about an hour before the Wood Memorial. So maybe if you take a look at Raise Kane, you can get a little bit of a barometer on Slip Mahoney in the Wood. I'm going to take a little shot with Dreamlike. I think the horse to beat is Hit Show on the outside, but that post position scared me a little bit. Dreamlike, third start for Pletcher Rapoli and Company, I thought was maybe a little bit intriguing in here. Give us your thoughts on the Wood.
Well, there's a lot of buzz about Dreamlike. And in fact, David Aragona, my counterpart, who makes the morning line at Belmont Aqueduct in Saratoga, certainly showed a lot of respect for this maiden by making him 7-2 on the morning line as the second choice behind the 5-2 morning line favorite Hit Show. And you mentioned Raise Kane. One thing about the fact that Raise Kane is running today in the Bluegrass and not in the Wood, at least Hit Show will move in at least one slot at the very least because of the withdrawal of in this race of Clear the Air, who will be running in the Bluegrass Stakes against Raise Kane. So the fact that Clear the Air is opting to run in Kentucky instead of New York today. Slip Mahoney, to me, again, here's one that I like because I don't think we've seen anything close to the best from him yet. Why? His breeding tells you that. He's by Arrogate out of an AP Indy mare. That tells you that he should love going long distances. And it also the Arrogates tend, like the Curlins, offspring of Curlin, oftentimes get better as they get older, like a fine wine. And Arrogate is the same situation there. And Slip Mahoney, he got beat in the Gotham, but I thought he ran a tremendous race. He was way, way farther back than he normally is and came running with a huge late rally. And to me, that was an eye-opening race for me. So I think Slip Mahoney, listed at 6-1 on the morning line, I like him in the Aqueduct. In the Gotham and Wood Memorial at Aqueduct, but it's a pretty wide open race.
Yeah.
Seth, here again, you're trying to beat the favorite. I'm trying to beat the favorite. I think the favorite is possibly beatable. On the other hand, so many times we try to beat these favorites, because they have a bad post or for whatever reason, and then a horse like Hit Show, who looks so good winning the Withers at the same distance, and that's very important. He's already proven at a mile and an eighth, which is what he's running today. And so he doesn't have that question. We know he can win a graded stakes race at a mile and an eighth. He's bred for the distance, too, by Candy Wright out of a Tappet mare. And Tappet is a tremendous source of stamina these days in racing and breeding. So, you got to give all the respect due to Hit Show, who is going to be the favorite in the race, but I'm going to try to beat him with Slip Mahoney.
Yeah, I mean, if Hit Show had gotten in just a few spots inside, I probably would have been on board. I think he is the one to beat. Last week, Forte was a similar situation. He just looked like he laid over that field. Now, it didn't quite play out that way. He got it done, but had to work to do it. It's going to be interesting to see in the Wood Memorial. John, before we let you go, we have a few minutes left, and we have talked to you about this in years past. Always fun to talk. And again, your online column this week takes a look at the Derby strike list, which you put together over the years. And I was very intrigued. I mentioned this earlier on the show when I was kind of touting your appearance. I said, I am very happy zero strikes. Derma Sotogaki, the Japanese horse, but the only other one was Zero Strikes Angel of Empire. And speaking of future bets, I got him early in March at 38-1, Angel of Empire. So I liked the win last week, and I like the Zero Strikes on the list. But for folks who aren't familiar, explain the Derby Strikes concept that you put together.
Well, congratulations to you getting that kind of a price on Angel of Empire, because I think he is definitely one of the top contenders going to the Kentucky Derby. He got on my radar when he finished second in the Smarty Jones on New Year's Day, and what got my attention was Brad Cox talking about how he was so pleased with the effort that day by Angel of Empire, that he would only get better as the distances got longer, and that has certainly been the case. And boy, he sure looked good winning that Arkansas Derby. So well done, Seth.
Thank you.
My future book possibility is I've got Practical Move at 83-1.
Ooh.
That I made on February 12th. So I've got a horse as the 8-5 morning line favorite at the Santa Anita Derby, and is listed as the second or third favorite by practically everybody in the world for the Kentucky Derby right now. And I have him at 83-1, $200 for a possible score of almost $17,000.
Ah, nice.
And I've got Kings Barnes at 35-1, too, that I made that same day on February 12th, because that day Kings Barnes won a race at Tampa Bay Downs. And I don't follow Tampa Bay all that close, but I happen to have the TV on and just happened to see it, and I went, wow. I know they're very high on him at the Todd Fletcher Barn, and so when he was 35-1, I put a couple of hundred on him. So if he wins the Kentucky Derby, that'll be $7,000 for me. As far as the strikes, the way that works, I've got 8 categories, and the thing about the strike system is that it's trying to isolate potential Kentucky Derby winners from both a historical and tactical standpoint, and that's the key. You're trying to look at the Kentucky Derby and come up with the top contenders, but more than that, kind of throw out the horses that may have weaknesses. Now, the thing about Forte, he only has one strike, and that is very key in the Kentucky Derby strike system of mine. Because the vast majority, 83% going back to 1973, 83% of the Kentucky Derby winners have had only one strike or zero strikes. So you don't have to have zero, although Angel of Empire has zero, and I know that makes you happy, and that's great. But one strike is okay, too. That puts you in that category of zero strikes or one strike. But the problem with Forte for me is, one of the most important categories is the eighth pole category. What I mean by that is the vast majority of horses that have won the Kentucky Derby have done so by being either first or second with an eighth of a mile to go in the Kentucky Derby. Even horses like Mind That Bird or horses that came from the clouds, they usually make that big move on the far turn, and they've put themselves into a position of being first or second with an eighth of a mile left to go. Now, Rich Strike was one of the rare exceptions last year. But remember, last year's Kentucky Derby was a real anomaly because of that ridiculous early pace set in that race. And the problem with Forte, his one strike is in that important eighth pole category. And the way you get a strike is to avoid a strike, you need to have been first or second at the eighth pole in either of your both of your final two starts before the Kentucky Derby. And Forte has not been first or second in the Florida Derby or the Fountain of Youth. And what that indicates is that if he runs like that in the Kentucky Derby, where he's not first or second with an eighth of a mile to go, he's probably going to leave himself with too much work to do in that final furlong to win the race. So that's my main problem right now with Forte. I also have the problem with Forte that his buyer speed figures are going in the wrong direction. He got a 100 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, then he got a 98 in the Fountain of Youth, and he gets a 95 in the Florida Derby. Horses like Practical Move or these other horses, Angel of Empire, both of those, Practical Move and Angel of Empire, have improving buyer speed figures going into the Kentucky Derby. And that's what you'd like to see, because you want to see a horse on the ascendancy in the speed figure department so that maybe they're going to peak on that first Saturday in May.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I'm really interested to see what Practical Move does today. Can he move forward off of his triple digit last time? That's going to be intriguing. But again, folks can, you know, type in John White's name and or go to your Twitter feed and link to your online columns. And the Derby Strikes is always a lot of fun. The graded stakes category, the win in a graded stakes, as you mentioned, the eighth pole category, gameness, distance foundation, et cetera, et cetera. And I would assume after this weekend, you'll probably kind of be finalizing the Derby Strikes list.
What was that, Seth?
I am assuming after the three preps today, you'll be kind of finalizing that Derby Strikes list.
That's exactly right, because a horse has to have run their last race before the Kentucky Derby before I can calculate their number of strikes. And we'll have the, you know, pretty much the field set. The only other points race left is the Lexington, but that's got a small number of points available. So we're going to pretty much know the Kentucky Derby field, and I'll be able to ascertain the strikes for all the probables.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And always look forward, John, to the conversation. It's always fun also because a little history comes into it, and you brought up my first years in the game when you mentioned, and to people new to the game, it must seem totally crazy, but yeah, the Wood Memorial used to be 2 weeks before, and you know, like the Florida Derby now, you get 5 or 6 weeks out. Back in the day, nobody would have thought 5 or 6 weeks away from the Kentucky Derby, nobody will do that. Now trainers love that 5 or 6 weeks.
It's amazing how that's changed. That was a big deal long ago, that you didn't want to be having a big gap into the Kentucky Derby. Now that's the preference of these trainers. I mean, it's just really flip-flopped. And like I say, I mean, Secretariat, people remember that he got beat in the Wood. Now, another thing people forget about Secretariat, he got beat by Sham in the Wood. But Sham didn't win it either. It was Angelite, a stablemate of Secretariat's, who was a front-running winner in a big, shocking upset. And Secretariat, it was reported, of course, Bill Mack in his fabulous book on Secretariat went into detail. But Secretariat competing in the Wood Memorial with a big abscess in his mouth.
Oh.
And but the key is he bounced back 2 weeks later and not only won the Kentucky Derby, but he did so breaking the track record, a record that still stands. He won the Preakness in a race that was originally mistimed, and it took decades before they were able to figure out that he had run the fastest Preakness in history, which is still the case. And then, of course, his iconic Belmont Stakes victory by 31 lengths, a performance that even the great golfer Jack Nicklaus was sitting in his den and recalled standing up and giving Secretariat a standing ovation. The Secretariat was widening like a tremendous machine in the Belmont Stakes. And boy, it's hard to believe 50 years have gone by since Secretariat in that remarkable Triple Crown. And the thing about Secretariat's Triple Crown, too, he won the Kentucky Derby coming from dead last, running each quarter mile faster than the previous quarter mile. In the Preakness, he made the most amazing move on the clubhouse turn that virtually, you know, I talked to Lafitte Pinkai Jr. about that Triple Crown series, and Pinkai on Sham, he said turning for home in the Kentucky Derby, he thought he was an absolute cinch because Sham was running so strongly, and he hadn't even asked him yet. And he said that Secretariat just toyed with me. And then he said in the Preakness Stakes, Secretariat made that move, that electrifying move on the clubhouse turn, and Pinkai said, I knew I was a cinch because no horse can make that kind of a move that early in a race like the Preakness and win. And he says he just toyed with me down the stretch again. And it kind of broke Sham's heart because, of course, Sham finished far back in the Belmont Stakes. The Secretariat broke a 25-year Triple Crown drought with that 31-length romp in the Test of the Champion.
Well, I'll bring up a fun story, and it dawns on me because last week we were actually down at Gulfstream covering the Florida Derby. So amongst the undercard winners was Weyburn for Jimmy Jurkins. And Jimmy Jurkins, I had him on the show up at Saratoga on the backstretch of some years back. And he recalled being a kid when his dad ran Onion against Secretariat. And Jim said he and the folks at the barn were on the backstretch, and Onion is ahead of Secretariat coming down the stretch. So they're looking across the track from the backstretch, and the horses disappear behind the tote board. And Jim said, we all expect that as they come out of the tote board, Secretariat will be ahead. But they come out of the tote board, and Onion is still ahead, and we went crazy. And that was kind of a fun story on one of Secretariat's defeats. But Onion disappears behind the tote board and comes back out ahead. So again, that was a Saratoga memory for the ages, certainly is one of the few defeats of Secretariat. But yeah, always fun to reminisce. John, we have to wrap it up now. As I say, it's been too long since we talked to you, but certainly enjoyed the conversation today. Enjoy the racing. I'm rooting for your future bets. I'm rooting for mine as well, but yours are better. So I'm rooting for you a little bit. But as always, appreciate the conversation, and we will talk again.
Always great to talk with you, Seth. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. John White from Santa Anita. Santa Anita Derby today. Don't forget, they have a mandatory in their jackpot as well, so keep that in mind. On my monitor up here, I see they've kicked off the pregame show at NYRA already, so I will step back and send it out. Racing Across America for this Saturday morning, wrapping it up. Be back in probably an hour or so, maybe less than that, with the action today, taking a look at all of this great action on a fun Saturday afternoon. So good luck to you. Tune back in. We'll be back for OTB Live on a Saturday afternoon shortly. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.
One for 18.